Would you be seated, please? Today begins the launch of our annual stewardship and financial appeal here at the Cathedral. And over the next month leading up to Covenant Sunday, which is November the 5th, we'll be laying out the needs and aspirations of this cathedral community. However, I want to focus today less on Christ Church Cathedral and our needs and vision than on ourselves. Specifically, I want to describe a spirituality of giving which is rooted in Judaism. Now, the Jewish word which most closely approximates what Christians have meant by charity is tzedakah. It's spelled T-Z-E-D-A-K-A-H, tzedakah. But there are important differences. First of all, we Christians tend to think of charitable giving as a voluntary affair. We speak of a free will offering, if you like. By contrast, tzedakah is considered a mitzvah or an obligation. It's laid on every adult Jew. Every Jew who has been bar or bat mitzvahed at about age 13, if you're bar mitzvahed, you're now a son of obligation. If you're bat mitzvahed, you're a daughter of obligation. Even the poorest of Jews has an obligation to perform tzedakah, with the proviso that, in so doing, a Jew is not to put him or herself in need of somebody else's charity. Sensible. Secondly, the English word charity, even the English word love, does not quite capture the spirit of tzedakah. The Hebrew word tzedek refers to righteousness or justice. So to perform tzedakah is a matter of righteousness. It's a matter of putting to rights the inequities of the world. It's about ensuring that the poor and the needy have returned to them the things they need in order to prosper. And that includes money, obviously, land, big issue in our country, respect. Can't prosper without the respect of people. I submit that when we think of our gifts in terms of furthering the righteousness of a just God, we may come to think both of our gifts and of ourselves as givers differently. I have found the concept of tzedakah extraordinarily helpful as a tool for examining my own heart and generosity. I also find it helpful to recognize that tzedakah would have been known and practiced by Jesus himself. And once you know a bit more about it, you will see how clearly it informs his numerous teachings about wealth and money and giving. So, in the 12th century, the legendary Jewish rabbi Maimonides classified the forms of tzedakah into 8 categories, ranking them from the greatest to the least, the most worthy to the least worthy. And this classification persists amongst Jews to this day. So here they are. First, the most meritorious form of charity is to give somebody else the ability to be self-reliant. In other words, we are affording the recipient the dignity of never having to be in debt again to somebody else. Secondly, is to give anonymously to an unknown recipient. Which is to say, so neither the giver nor the receiver knows the identity of the other. It's a double-blind gift. So the donor doesn't get to pick the cutest child in the catalog. And therefore, surrenders control over how his or her gift is deployed. It's a gift. It's gone. Third is also to give tzedakah anonymously, but this time to a known recipient. So the point is here that the donor knows who is benefiting from his or her gift, but the recipient never learns the identity of his or her benefactor. And so, you see what this means, that the recipient is free from feeling beholden to this person. Fourth is to give or to do, to talk about doing or performing tzedakah, to do tzedakah publicly, so your identity is known, to an unknown recipient. In other words, you don't know the recipient's identity, but they sure know yours. Think here of the phenomenon of naming opportunities. You make a donation, let's say, to install an elevator in your parish church. You don't know exactly who's going to benefit by your gift, but the beneficiaries all know that they're riding the Mary Smith elevator. Now, we're only halfway down the list. It's still a very worthy form of tzedakah. It's just not quite so worthy as if you had done it without looking for recognition. Fifth is to give before you are asked. You haven't got your pledge card in the mail yet. You probably know that it is axiomatic amongst fundraisers that the number one reason that people do not give to a particular charity is nobody asked them. Stories abound, I could shake my head, of faithful Anglicans who leave their estate to the Salvation Army instead of their parish church. And why? Because the Salvation Army asked and the church assumed. And yet, this, the fifth highest form of tzedakah, sees the donor giving without being asked. So do you understand what this means for your spirit? This kind of charity requires you to be someone who is conscientiously attuned to the needs and the injustices around you. And also to understand how redemptive it can be to save another person from having to come and ask you to help them. Next, sixth, is to give adequately after being asked. So, the difference here is that you have made somebody wait for what they need. You've made them come and tell you that they can't manage without you. But to your great credit, you do respond adequately. Now, that observation invites us to consider what it is we mean by an adequate gift. I take it we are saying two things. First, our gift is commensurate with the need. And the truth is that may require us to rethink some of our priorities. None of us has infinite resources, but in the face of great need, let's say our adult child has an accident and is no longer able to work, an adequate response might include spending our golf time babysitting, or redirecting our charitable donations to home care. And then secondly, an adequate gift takes account of our personal capacity to give. We're to give in proportion to what we actually have. Seventh, is to give willingly, but now inadequately. For example, to give 20 dollars, cheerfully, without hesitation, for earthquake relief, when you could have afforded 200. You're still performing tzedakah, but there remains in your heart Christians would call a spirituality of scarcity. Either you just don't get the magnitude of the problem, or for whatever reason, you're feeling a need to hang on to your resources in case they would come in handy for something else later. And last, eighth, is to give, as it is said, in sadness. This is the least meritorious of the forms of tzedakah. It's to give, but to do so grudgingly. I'll fill out the bleepity bleep intention card, but I'm sick to the teeth of always being asked to dig deeper. What did that church ever do for me? Do you notice how far short this response falls, first of tzedakah, which is performed without even being asked, but even more importantly, of the idea that tzedakah is never about me anyway, what I am going to get out of what I give. It's about the other. And I should note that in the literature, there is a second, slightly different interpretation of what it might mean to give in sadness, and that is that one is giving out of a sense of pity rather than of duty or obligation. Now, I know that we don't might like to think of being motivated by obligation or duty these days. The Jews have a lot less trouble with this than we do. And so it may be hard for us to grasp what is wrong with being motivated by sympathy. The point, I think, is that such giving is dependent upon somebody having to touch my heart first, having to persuade me emotionally. In other words, I'll only give if I feel sorry for you. The problem is that not all need is pitiable. The problem is that there's something just a bit patronizing about pity. So there you have it. Eight kinds of tzedakah or charity, from the most worthy to the least worthy. And you notice there's no number nine, which is zero. Zero isn't an option if it's an obligation. Right? 1 to 8. And I offer these to you because one of the dangers inherent in any fundraising effort or capital campaign is that fundraisers, and this includes parish stewardship committees, can get overly focused on it rather than the giver. But we are the church, and I am a priest, and it is, I believe, equally our business to focus on the heart of the donor. We are called, each and every one of us, to examine our own philanthropic motives and practices, and to grow not just in largesse, but in spirit. Our Jewish brothers and sisters have much to teach us in this regard. Amen.